Just defer. Yeah. All right. What's the pleasure of the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move to defer this case until the June meeting of the board.
Second by Mr. Bowden. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Carried. Thank you all very much and hope you work it out. All right. Item 5 is Parrot Seafood Corporation. Jeff? Jeff Madden.
Good morning. Coward Seafood Corporation requests authorization to deploy 4-foot wide by 6-foot long by 12-inch high individually buoyed oyster aquaculture cages on privately leased oyster ground occupying 4 separate areas in the Cone River, totaling approximately 24.5 acres of suitable hard bottom. The cages will be deployed in water depths ranging from approximately minus 1.5 feet to minus 6 feet mean low water and at a maximum cage density of 350 cages per acre. The 4 sites will be located along the west shore of the Cone River across from Walnut Point along an approximately 5,000 feet of shoreline beginning at Stevens Point, that would be on the northwest, and extending southeast. The project is protested by a nearby property owner. This will orient the commission. We are now at the, this is Lewisetta, the Potomac, and out here is Walnut Point and Stevens Point, which is the northern end of the project area, and it moves along through this area here, along this shoreline. I'd like to point out at this time the protestant's property, as near as I can tell, that's the house right there. What I've done, now there's a lot of data here, but what I've done is taken the oyster ground lease map and superimposed an aerial photograph. And I'll go back over those geographic points again. Here's Walnut Point, Stevens Point, and the shoreline in question down along here. I've also, so you can see what's going on here, the yellow are the private leases. The red denote the public oyster ground. And the blue is the shoreline. I took the liberty of superimposing the 4 project sites in chartreuse here. The northernmost area, the middle ground here, which is the largest of the areas, and the 2 smaller here. The project is located within 4 separate sites totaling approximately 24.5 acres of state-owned subaqueous bottom within the Cone River in Northumberland County. The applicant proposes to deploy 4-foot wide by 6-foot wide by 12-inch high individually buoyed oyster cages in water depths ranging from minus 1/2 inch at mean low water to minus 6 feet at mean low water and at cage density of 350 cages per acre. All the proposed deployment sites lie within oyster planting grounds leased by Coward Seafood. The site closest to the mouth straddles 2 oyster leases totaling 16.39 acres near Stevens Point. The largest site, right here, a 10-acre area and 3 smaller and a smaller 3-acre site are located on a 38.49 acre lease located along the west shore of the Cone River and south of public ground 92. The smallest ground is located on a 10.93 acre lease located upstream of the mouth of the Cone River. That's this one here. Protestant's property is located below and upstream of the proposed deployment site. What are they going to do? Well, what's happening is that the Coward Seafood proposes that cages will be stocked with seed oysters and placed within the defined sites at a density of 350 cages per acre. Each cage is proposed to be marked with a green or blue buoy. That will, will include an identification number with all references. Coward Seafood. The applicant has stated that they expect that the maintenance, including cleaning, crab removal, oyster splitting, and so forth, will occur approximately every 3 to 5 weeks during the spring, summer, and fall seasons, with, of course, less routine maintenance scheduled during the winter months. The applicant anticipates a grow-out time of approximately from 12 to 18 months from seed to harvest size. Following the completion of the grow-out period, all cages will be retrieved and brought back to the oyster house for processing. The empty cages will then either be cleaned or redeployed. Staff would like to point out here some of the details. Here's one of the cages. You'll see quite quickly here that it's 6 feet by 4 feet and only a foot off the substrate. And the reason that I wanted to bring that up is that by themselves, the cages would qualify for exemption under the Code of Virginia pertaining to our on-bottom shellfish aquaculture activities. But because there's a bridle and there's going to be a cork on each of the buoys, they're not exempt, and hence that's why we're here today. In addition to it being protested, because they want to put a cork on each one of these buoys, it becomes a three-dimensional affair. Another thing that point out is that Coward Seafood has also expressed an interest in utilizing the proposed cages not only for native oysters, but for Chrysostrea area kensis, in conjunction with the projects with the Seafood Council. Let's take another look at another slide. Now we're looking down at it. The perspective's a little skewed, but if you were looking down from the surface, you would see the buoy. There's a chain, bridle, and we're looking right straight down into the cages. Now, the top's not on this, but there will be a top that'll confine the animals in that cage, in the cage area. And here's a profile, side profile. The range of depths that they choose to deploy or would like to deploy the cages is dependent on two main factors. One, they want to get below the ice line in the wintertime, but during the summer they want to get above that dead layer, the anoxic layer. So that's why they need the range to deploy within the -1.5 to -6. And they also want to, of course, be able to have the latitude to place it on the best areas possible, the best clay bottom on the along that shore. This shows the grand scheme. Here are the areas, and I'm going to highlight them. But I mentioned earlier this area near Stevens Point, it straddles a larger lease. Here's the area right out here, the 10-acre spot, and we've highlighted them again. As I mentioned in the introduction, the project is protested by Ms. Janet B. Lloyd, who's co-owner of a waterfront parcel with her brother, Mr. R. Bruce Burgess. That's down in this location down here, approximately. Ms. Lloyd is concerned that the possible deployment of the 700 oyster cages downstream of her property will devalue her property by negatively impacting her view. She's also concerned that the cages will encroach on her riparian area, have a negative impact on area wildlife, and pose a safety hazard to boaters. In addition, she believes that the placement of the buoyed cages in the nearshore area close to her property line could present a burden on her choices for the location of any future pier structures built off of her property. There was another protestant, Mr. Tom Spradlin, who has the piece of property up off Stevens Point. Mr. Spradlin originally had similar concerns that Ms. Lloyd had. However, Mr. Cowart and Mr. Spradlin were able to reach an agreement. I point out a couple of items in that agreement, is that they that Cowart Seafood agreed to establish a 200-foot buffer area offshore of the Spradlin property. That would be in this area over here. In addition, they also agreed that the they would use less noticeable buoys or fewer number if that was practical, and also that they would utilize the area further offshore from Mr. Spradlin's property first and work toward the inshore area, utilize the deeper contours before moving closer to his property. Each of the four sites are located within waters which are not currently are condemned. There's no shellfish condemnation. The Department of Health, Division of Bureau and Wastewater Engineering states that the project is in compliance with their sanitary regulations for marinas and boat moorings. We have received letters of support, and I wanted to add one more that was received afterwards, after we printed. The Northumberland County Board of Supervisors passed a resolution on their meeting April 13th. In addition to the resolution that's coming to your attention now, staff received a letter of support from Mr. R. Bruce Burgess, the co-owner of the property with Ms. Lloyd, who is in support of the project, as well as the Northumberland County Economic Development Commission and the Chesapeake Bay. We've also received a letter of support from Dr. Roger Mann, Director of Research and Advisory Services at VIMS. And while I'm on the case of VIMS, the Institute of Marine Science indicates that the environmental impacts associated with the proposed project are temporary in nature and would only be a result of the suspension of bottom material during recovery of the equipment. No other state agency has protested the project. Here I wanted to point out on a navigation chart, they're going to be utilizing the area within the 5 foot, along that 5 foot contour line, and not out into the deep channel. Because there was so much data on here, I thought I'd make it kind of clear here. Here's the deeper water and the buoy line. Here's the channel runs along here. So they're way in here. And let me highlight it again. So the sites are way inboard of where large deep draft vessels will navigate. That's the location of lease number 14244, which is up downstream of the Lloyd property. I wanted to show you a cage here. This is one picture that I took at the processing plant. This is steel rod here. The baskets, and there's not going to be a top on it, but this, if you look carefully, you'll see that the animals will be confined in these wire mesh baskets. There'll be a top similar in mesh material on top of that, and then they'll chain the bridle to it, and the buoy will go to the surface. And that ends my presentation of the slides. As currently proposed, the cage is at a density of 350 cages per acre, would occupy 21.8% of the total area requested by the applicant. However, the applicant has stated that the cages will most likely be deployed in clusters separated by fairways to allow their access to the cages at the times of deployment, maintenance, and retrieval. You'll see that as item 2-1 in your packet. That's a proposal. They think they may want to cluster them together. The clustering will represent a more densely packed arrangement, occupying a much larger percentage of the total area within smaller portions of the requested deployment sites. The example they provide, they'll have approximately 33% cover on the bottom. At the proposed cage planning density, and particularly within the placement of cages within clusters, staff believes that the placement of the individually buoyed cages at the four sites proposed will preclude most, if not all, access to these areas by the public and other user groups. While the deployment of the cages near the Lloyd Burgess property line doesn't appear to hinder Ms. Lloyd's ability to exercise her riparian rights, staff would like to point out that the Commission does not have the legal authority to determine the extent of Ms. Lloyd's riparian area, nor can the Commission resolve a private property issue surrounding the potential evaluation of said property. A court of chancery is the proper tribunal to make such an apportionment and determination of a suit drawn independently of this public hearing. Accordingly, staff recommends approval of the project with the following conditions. The corners of the deployment sites shall be surveyed, and the dimensions of the site shall not exceed the dimensions identified in the staff's evaluation. The survey of the sites shall become a part of the VMRC permit. No cages shall be deployed in waters less than minus 1.5 feet at mean low water. The permit and authorization to retain the structure shall be valid for a period of 5 years. After 5 years, the permittee may request the Commission reevaluate the project and authorize the activity for an additional period of time. The permittee shall submit annual reports of production. Should the water column lease procedure be implemented, the project shall be reevaluated and, if deemed applicable, converted to a lease upon termination of the initial 5-year period. In addition, the public shall not be excluded from any area not physically occupied by the authorized structures themselves. The permittee shall properly maintain all structures and markers and shall remove all structures upon their failure or falling into a state of disrepair, which I believe to be unlikely, or upon cessation of their use as agricultural structures. Should the applicant wish to deploy triploid Chrysostrea areacensis, the applicant must submit an emergency plan for the removal of the animals in the event of an impending natural disaster, which could result in their dispersal. And finally, staff recommends an annual rent at a rate of 0.5 cent per square foot for the total area as surveyed by the applicant as prescribed above. Should the survey area equate to the estimate provided in the application, the amount would be $5,336.10 for the occupation of the water column and the encroachment over 24.5 acres of state-owned submerged lands. The royalty shall be based upon the total area of the sites, not on the physical dimensions of the cages. Having said all of that, I'll be happy to field any questions that you
any
might
questions
have.
Questions from the Commission? Mr. Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to understand, there is, at this point, one outstanding protest, is that correct? And that's
yes,
on a property that's co-owned with one owner supporting it and one owner opposing.
That's correct, Mr. Robbins.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have a general comment, and I made some notes yesterday, and I think I'll just read through them. We have three similar cases before us today, all involving oyster aquaculture. And while oyster aquaculture is a relatively new thing, in general, shellfish aquaculture is a good thing and should be encouraged. Aquaculture-raised oysters are a renewable resource that can provide water quality and habitat benefits in addition to substantial economic benefits to the oyster industry, an industry that's trying to survive after so many years of almost non-existent conventional harvest. In the cases at hand, support has been given by VIMS and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, and in this case by the Board of Supervisors of Northumberland County, among others. Since the oyster aquaculture is a new and evolving thing, a flexible process needs to be developed to simplify the application process and allow for equipment and location changes as circumstances dictate. At the same time, we must recognize that there are potential usage conflicts that may arise because of the aquaculture activities, and we need to have a process to resolve these conflicts. Navigation conflicts must be considered. Conflicts with other fisheries using the same area must be considered. Conflicts with pleasure boating must be considered. Visibility issues must be considered. Certainly no one wants to look at 300 floats per acre in front of their house. SAV beds must be avoided. To address these conflict issues, I encourage the staff to first make a study of other areas in the United States and beyond where the problem has already been addressed. There's no need to reinvent the wheel or make things up as we go along. If we can gain from the experiences in Washington State, Long Island Sound, and New York, France, and Japan, among others. Roger Mann and Stan Allen at VIMS have broad exposure to what happens with oyster aquaculture elsewhere, and I'm sure they can provide guidance. Give us a report on what you find from your study and what you think will work in Virginia. Second, consider whether the one-foot rule is reasonable or overly restrictive. Third, does a float truly move the case to a water column permit from a simple use of an existing oyster lease? Fourth, how can the application process for oyster aquaculture be simplified and made flexible until consensus can be reached on how best to raise the oysters? And finally, consider another acceptable way to mark the cages, perhaps larger floats at the corners of the area with signage of warning oyster aquaculture area or something like that. At the same time, I encourage the industry to try to anticipate and resolve conflicts before applying. I think in this case, Mr. Cowart has done that. Certainly, SAV beds need to be avoided, and navigation cannot be seriously affected by your activities. Second, figure out a way to recover the cages without having to put floats on each one. Again, no one wants to see 350 floats per acre in front of their house. Figure out how to clearly mark the cage areas to prevent incidents with sailboats and other deep draft vessels. And work with the VMRC staff to inform them of contemplated changes to gear and locations if you find that the existing ones do not work. Next, I encourage other oyster producers who are continuing to use the old methods to learn about the aquaculture methods. I don't believe the old methods will work much longer, and the new methods will give you oysters to sell that mature faster and therefore are less vulnerable to disease. Times change and your methods can change too. And finally, I encourage pleasure boaters to have an understanding that the public waters must be shared by all users. No single user group can assume that all waters everywhere are available for its activities. And finally, remember that oyster aquaculture in general is a good thing for the waters of Virginia. We just need to have a simple process to encourage the practice while giving consideration to the other users of the waters who may have conflicts. And then continuing on with specifics on this case, why do we ask the permittee to submit annual reports of production?
That's really in keeping overarching all of this is the fact that in 2004, as a result of several legislative studies by the Chesapeake Bay Commission and staff, the legislature enacted Chapter 16 of Title 28.2, which is the water column leasing program, set forth requirements for leasing, things to consider, rates for payment. But it was, in essence, an understanding that aquaculture, other more so than traditional oyster leasing and harvesting, planting, shelling activities had an impact on the water column and other uses. Under traditional activities, if you shelled and seed or even came in, you really had no impact on crab potters, gill netters, anyone else who used the water column for recreation. The aquaculture was an acknowledgement, if you will, by the legislature, that in fact aquaculture was requiring more of the public resource. To make a long story short, that bill, we believe, has sunsetted due to a budget situation, and the opinion seems to be that it would have to be reintroduced and and reenacted. But what staff did was basically look at Chapter 16, and even if it's not there, look at that as a sense, if you will, of what the legislature had envisioned. And in fact, annual production reports, and I don't know the specific section, is one of the requirements that the legislature said, you know, for this lease to make sure that it's used, you have to be able to do it. And some of that is to preclude people from basically applying for 250 acres, going for 5 years, and basically precluding other uses and not making, you know, productive use of it. So we patterned that recommendation after what is actually in currently that Chapter 16 of the code.
Okay, and then the additional charge is because it's believed they're using the water column.
Right. You'll see also
not
in
just,
Chapter
not
16.
Not just the bottom. The bottom is covered by the oyster
leaf. At $1.50 per acre.
Right.
And the legislature also, when they looked at the chapters and after Chapter 16, realized that there were additional rates for the utilization of the water column over and above the lease of the bottom that you were paying. And the 0.5 cent per square foot, basically, if you do that at 43,560 square feet, you know, it comes out at a density of, I guess, per acre is something like $217 and odd cents, but at a density of 350 crab cages per acre, it's 62 cents per container, you know, and which we thought was in keeping also with the legislation, the fact that it is really a use over and above the lease, and the fact that the commission in December, you know, reimposed the use of state-owned submerged land. So that's how we came up with that particular figure, the rationale, and we also think that's appropriate.
All right. Any other questions for staff from the commission? All right, thank you very much. We may have some after we hear from the others. All right, is anyone here representing Coward Chief? Come right on up. Yeah, you going to both speak? Okay, well, let me swear you in at the same time then. You swear the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth shall help you God. All right, come right on up to the podium and state your name and position.
A.J. Erskine with Coward Seafood, aquaculture manager. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission. I'm going to make this brief as Jeff Madden did a great job describing our proposal. But essentially, we got into this just about a year ago for the obvious reasons that we want to have local product available near Coward Seafood, that essentially you don't have to rely on other regions such as the Gulf of Mexico or other areas such as Delaware Bay to provide local oysters. If we can put 5 or 6 bushels in a cage and retrieve those when the market demands for oysters, that's the most beneficial way to do this. Clearly, planting loose oysters on the bottom with predation such as cow nose rays, that's not realistic. So we've gone to this cage structure where it's protected and we can easily retrieve it, which led us into developing a retrieval mechanism for this cage. And as we did, we came into how easily how is the easiest way to do that, and one was a bridle system with a buoy attached to it. We were understanding that within compliance of the regulation as it stood, if we built a cage that was a foot off the bottom and we were able to identify with a crab pot, we would not have a buoy, we would not have to apply for essentially a permit. We'd be within compliance. We understand that changed, and we wanted to apply properly for the permit because we put a buoy on it, and we're taking the water column, essentially the water column use away, and it was going to be for this culture, oyster culture activity. And we do believe it's important to buoy them in the sense that we need to identify the cage for the safety of everybody that is using the water, and of course make it for the easy retrieval of these cages. As far as some of the issues that are brought up, we are not in navigable waterways. As you can see from Jeff's presentation, we're near shore in a range of water depths about 1.5 feet to 6.5 feet at mean low water. And the property owner that is objecting, that is a co-owned property, and Mr. Burgess does fully support the activities that we're doing. Ms. Lloyd does object although that is not directly in front of her her property. Some of the other issues that, you know, she brings up are the navigational issues and some of the wildlife. And I'll just point out that these structures actually encourage marine life to congregate around them, such as small crustaceans, finfish, and other marine life. So,
how do you feel about the conditions that staff is recommending?
I believe we feel comfortable with them, and we feel they're fair. We are, you know, taking a water use, so I feel comfortable with the recommendations.
Are there any questions from the commission for the applicant?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Garrison.
I appreciate what Mr. Fox's comments. I think they were very apropos about several things, and the clam aquaculture has worked very well with the Ballard seafood gun in particular. I think this is a new methodology we're getting into, and maybe you could answer this question, or maybe Mr. Coward could. If the predation on our oysters, we just put in 22,000 seed oysters, if predation on those oysters could be reduced 50%, would this be still be a methodology that you would use, perhaps?
As far as planting them in cages, would we still use that?
Yes, sir.
I believe we would, that we could obtain higher survival rates than 50%.
I mean, I'm saying that if the predation on orchards was reduced by half, mm-hmm. would you still use the cage method?
Maybe like Coward can answer that more effectively. I believe we would still use cage culture.
How much would you have to reduce that? Lake, could you answer that?
Mr. Garrison, I think that in looking at agriculture, probably cages may be there.
Mr. Coward, I'm going to have to ask you to come up here because we have to have a verbatim, as you know.
I should know, shouldn't I? Mr. Garrison, I think that, you know, the basic reason that we've gone in the direction of aquaculture in our company is based on the fact that we have had tremendous losses in recent years because of Count O's rays. And we don't know why the Count O's rays are eating oysters now other than they're starving to death. If we could cut the Count O's ray populations in half, perhaps, and look at no loss to oysters anymore because they're feeding on some other resource because they're not overpopulated, then perhaps we wouldn't need to contain the product. When you move into a triploided Debbie strain like we have now, you have a relatively high cost per oyster once you raise that product and get it on the bottom, and it does make more sense to try to protect it because your initial cost in the product itself is higher, and you try to achieve a much higher success ratio. We wouldn't be able to put these orchards on the bottom without some type of protection. And at 50%, I'm not sure if, in fact, the count would raise 50%, we wouldn't perhaps be able to do it either. If we could get the ray predation to down where it was in the 70s in the area, which was zero, then it would be a possibility. But, you know, that's the reason our company has, we've sort of been through a metamorphosis of trying to reach a point where we could raise oysters in Virginia again. And, you know, 5 years on that, if you'd asked me or anyone in our company if we would be into oyster aquaculture, we probably would have said, no, we don't want to do that. We want to raise oysters on the bottom as we always have. And as Mr. Fox said a while ago, you know, I think we need to recognize in the state that if we're going to be successful, we need to do the same things that they've done in France. We need to do what they've done on the west coast of the United States, and that's move into aquaculture. And we're going to have to develop those methods here, because we don't have the tidal changes that they do in France, the tidal differences. We don't have the weather that they have in France or on the West Coast. And we have to address freezing conditions in the wintertime. We have to address low oxygen conditions in the summer months. We can't go too deep or we lose the oysters. And these are the type of things that are pretty much, I guess, particular to what we do here in the state of Virginia. And that's the reason we've done and requested what we've asked for. We've looked at how do you do this, how do you retrieve the cages, how do you mark them so somebody else doesn't run into them perhaps or cause problems. And, you know, perhaps a cork system, as Mr. Fox mentioned a while ago, is not the best way. But, you know, we're infants in this and we're learning. And we're certainly willing to try different things to try to make this work. So, you know, as far as your question, Mr. Garrison, I don't think we have all the answers to that. Certainly if count of predation was reduced, it would make it more advantageous to plant oysters on the bottom.
Any other questions from the commission? All right. Thank you very much. You will have time to rebut, of course. Is there anyone here in opposition that wishes to address the commission? Yes, ma'am. Come right on up. Would you raise your right hand, please? You swear the testimony you shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your full name.
My name is Janet Lloyd. I am co-owner with my brother, Bruce Burgess, a property adjacent to the property Mr. Howard is speaking of. Thank you very much, Mr. Pritchard, excuse me, and commissioners, and Mr. McFadden. I wish to express my concern over the request of Howard Seafood's application for the aquaculture cagers, privately leased oyster grounds, and areas of the Cone River. Let me state up front that I am not opposed to aquaculture. I am not opposed to the cages. My main concern are the methods of brewing. My family has owned this property for almost 50 years, and yet you have heard there seems to be some problems with family politics, and let's set that aside between a letter of support from my brother, of which I was not aware, and my opposition for this. I have not previously opposed any oyster raising in the Cone River that Mr. Coward has produced. I have signed off on the previous things, unfortunately, that Cal Knows raised went into it. I am concerned about the value of the property that lies in the location, the view and the ambiance, unencumbered waterfront views, lack of external obsolescence, and unrestricted access to the Cone River increase the value of the property. This is the obvious objection to the proposed buoyed oyster aquaculture cages. With a maximum density of 350 cages per acre, there's a possibility of 700 bobbing buoys adjacent to our property line, within sight of our unobstructed view of the river and preventing northern access to our beach. And I produced photographs. Mr. McFadden said that he was going to show them on the slides, but you do have copies of the photographs of the areas. Our family and grandchildren enjoy benefits of waterfront living. Using kayaks and canoes, we participate in recreational exploration and enjoyment of the environment. With 700 obstructions close to the shoreline, my children and grandchildren would have to paddle further onto the river. Wind, currents, and deeper water pose a safety concern. I would be apprehensive for my 10-year-old granddaughter or my 18-year-old daughter, or even myself, to paddle a greater distance from the shelter of shoreland due to the bobbing buoys in the cages. The drawing indicates the cages are to be placed at the mean high water mark, 14-244, with the dimensions of the cages being 12 inches in height, 6 feet in length, 4 feet in width. I feel that the cages themselves would be visible at low tide, thus creating another unsightly man-made intrusion. In conversation with Lake Coward, I was told that the buoys were necessary to locate the cages in order to retrieve and check. I was not told how often or in what manner these checks would take place. In any manner, the checks would disturb the tranquility of the river. Excuse me while I get my papers in order. According to the joint group of experts in scientific aspects of marine pollution, all forms of aquaculture have potential effect on wildlife. Human activity can be disruptive in the vicinity of important breeding colonies and feeding grounds, while the aquaculture facility itself can attract predatory species. I have not been informed as to what type of cages that would prevent the predatory species. And again, in what manner, except other than the statement right now, 3 to 5 weeks. Location of a pier or dock extending from our property would be influenced by the location of the cages. Accessibility to a pier, if installed to the left of the sand beach, would be inhibited. Boating, swimming, and enjoyment of the river would be affected. Recently, while walking on the property, I flushed out a flock of geese resting on the bank where the proposed cages would be installed. They flew upriver and can be seen again in the photos that I have presented. I believe the cages would upset the natural wildlife, the geese would be deterred in landing amongst the bobbing buoys, and the intent of the cages to prevent the cow nose rays from destroying the economic fortune of oystering. I feel that the cages would obstruct the natural habitat of numerous wildlife. Again, if they are at low water, they would only be 6 inches below this water line. The oyster grounds are leased and not owned by Coward Seafood, as far as I have knowledge. The owners of affected property do have certain rights which I feel are threatened by the installation of these buoy cages. I refer to a copy of the Rappahannock record. You do not have this. I will give you these items. It states from, again, this is April 5th. It's 1990, but people were still concerned about this. As reading from this of Larry Chowing, part of the problem we are running into is that the older landowners who have these riparian rights, oyster rights, think they own the bottom, said Bert Farlotti, engineer with the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. They pay $1.50 a year, and all of a sudden they can tell people not to come across the water. Their actual rights are overrated in the minds of many of these property owners. Our family enjoys sailing, boating, and I'm also concerned with the other proposed installation sites, which present navigational hazards. With almost 25 acres covered by bobbing buoys, the area in which to tack while sailing in a small draft boat or maneuver would be restricted. I'm told by Mr. Cowart that they are considering the coloring of the buoys, either in a blue or a green. But the placement of buoys on their proposed area would be 8,575 bobbing buoys, which is a maximum density of 350 buoys per acre, which is 24.5 acres. The letter of notice states the oyster cages to be individually buoyed, but I do not see any indication how they are to be anchored or maintained in the location where they are installed. Wind currents, extreme weather conditions may relocate the cages and create additional problems for the residents and boaters. There is an article that was submitted by Senator Smith and Representative Emmerin that said demand explanation regarding oyster cages on Milford beaches. This is in Maryland. It states, it is my understanding that equipment failure of some kind is most likely responsible for letting these heavy oyster cages and bags escape from the underwater oyster cages intended to enclose them. This was January 9, 2004. As these oyster bags were the type used in the traditional established means of oyster farming, I'm especially concerned about what kind of equipment failure we might expect from commercial operation of the type now being proposed. Obviously, we have to be very wary about the proposed commercial operation, and this latest equipment failure triggers an alarm that we must heed. And I've also heard that stated by Mr. Fox. One other thing is that you can buy oyster cages online. What is to determine the stability of these cages? As well as also in the article by the Joint Group of Experts in the Scientific Aspects of Marine Pollution, chemicals introduced via construction materials. Some construction materials release substances to the aquatic environment, heavy metals, plastic additives. Their presence is unknown to most of the farmers, although awareness is increasing. Frequently, preservatives have been intentionally used, assuming that they are relatively harmful to the cultured species. At the present time, there are few standards regulating the composition of materials used in aquaculture facilities. My objections relate to the devaluation of property values, the restrictions imposed on property improvements, the environmental impact, the hazards to navigation, the infringements of rights, the possible unintentional disbursement of cages by natural factors, and the reduced enjoyment of recreational and activities and contamination of the scenic beauty of the river. Please consider these concerns. Thank you, ma'am.
Any questions from the commission? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Cowart, would you like to respond to anything that you've heard the protestants say? You have 2 minutes.
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, we lease the bottom in front of Bruce Burgess and Janet Lloyd's piece of property. There's a house on this property, but nobody's lived in that house since I remember. Perhaps one or two nights a year somebody might spend some time in it, but it's not something that somebody lives in. We purposely didn't put cages, even though we leased the bottom in front of that house, we purposely didn't put cages in front of it, and I really don't know the total amount of waterfront that Mr. Burgess and Ms. Lloyd have, but it's certainly not a lot. The bottom in that area that we have, that we are putting the cages on is clay bottom, and it goes out probably maybe 200 feet perhaps or 250 feet, and then it turns to mud. We cannot put cages on these areas as we can't utilize most of the areas in the state of Virginia to forage to aquaculture. We're looking for a hard substrate, something that will support this cage, and something that the oysters won't, that the cage won't bury in. Our cage is only 4 inches off the bottom. The bottom of the oysters, or where the oysters are lying, is 4 inches off the bottom of the river. So we have been, we've actually designed the cage that way so that we would come under the exemption of 12 inches or less. And also, they're certainly they infringe on others' rights less at that point. Ms. Lloyd talked about riparian rights. Certainly, we do not in any way, as an industry or as an aquaculture industry, or even as an oyster growing industry on our sebaceous leases, have the right to impinge or infringe on the riparian rights of these individuals. They have the right to wharf out. They have the right to the navigable water in the channel. And these are two of the four common law rights, as Taylor Murphy explained to us some years ago, that were brought over from England. And we can't put these cages in front of their property or in front of their dock. There's no dock on this property at this point. To my knowledge, I don't know that any boating's ever been done from it, but perhaps with a canoe or a kayak. But certainly, if a dock were built there, we couldn't affect that right. The cages, our intention is to keep these cages submerged. We don't intend to have them above the water line. We certainly have to have them submerged in the wintertime because the oysters will freeze if we do get freezing weather. So that's another reason that we would stay down. And the material that we're using is steel that's galvanized, which is the common practice in our waterways. And we're using an aqua mesh product that's used on probably most of the eel pots in the state of Virginia and a lot of the crab pots. So that's a galvanized wire that's welded wire, galvanized and coated with plastic in order to help the wire have a long life. But certainly I don't know what else we haven't gone in front of the property. We don't think that it's in front of our property totally in this case. And I just don't see how it could be of a great problem to Ms. Lloyd, but certainly I appreciate her right to object to it.
Thank you, Mr. Cowart. And the matter is now before the committee. Mr. Garrison,
I have a question.
And then Mr. Robbins.
I have a question, Mr. Coward. Lake, could
I'm
you
sorry,
come in?
Mr. Coward.
Mr. Coward, you feel comfortable on the last staff recommendation. We have a lot of storms that come in our way and all of a sudden veer. And some people get protected from them and some just let them pass. You feel like your company has adequate removal equipment in case there is a storm on the way that you picked these up in the last...
That has to do with the possible deployment of Eric Kansas.
Cripples.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes, sir.
We don't have a problem with that. In fact, we would probably want to do that and put them in a safe area.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, have Mr. Robbins and then Mr. Schick and then Mr. Fox.
Thank you. I also have a question for Mr. Cowart. In your letter to the commission, you indicate that approximately 5% of Virginia's bottom is suitable habitat for this type of activity. That's a very small percentage of the bottom. Is that also true of the oyster ground leases that you have that only certain activities would be suitable for this type of location?
Mr. Robbins, in response to that, I think we have about 1 million sebaceous acres in the state of Virginia, and 240,000 of those acres are part of what's called the Baylor Survey, which was surveyed in the late 1890s by a gentleman by the name of Colonel Baylor. And they're set aside for public use, for public oystering and clamming. The remaining acres are available to be leased by individuals such as myself and other people in the state. If you're a resident of the state or a Virginia corporation, then you're available to lease these bottoms. About 100 to 110,000 acres in the state of Virginia are leased. Some of these, because of salinities, because of bottom substrate, are certainly not suitable for oyster production. And in our case, out of the leases we have, because of the buffers that we maintain to protect our bottoms and so forth, in our case, no more than 10% of our bottoms can be productive to start with. So I think a fair estimate of if we had 10,000 acres in the state of Virginia to 20,000 acres of private leaseholds that possibly could be made productive with oyster aquaculture, that's about the extent of what can take place. When you factor in riparian rights for someone to build a dock or to navigate to a dock, or when you factor in other factors such as navigable channels, we have a very small percentage of the state that could be utilized for this process that we're going through. And when we do have good productive areas such as we have that we've applied for that have the substrate, that have been historically productive in the past when oysters lived and weren't affected by dermal MSX or Caldo's rays, I think it's very important that hopefully this commission will look at these favorably and say this is probably really good for the state of Virginia, and it's good for, you know, it's good for the the ecology of the bay. So, you know, our upland property values are determined by how clean the water is. And if we have an activity that's actually taking place in the water that possibly will clean these waters and make them better for other resources, and perhaps we're in a situation where that particular activity is very valuable to the upland property as well and to the property values.
All right, Mr. Schick.
How large are the buoys that are demarking? About the same size as a crab pot buoy, larger?
We're trying to actually design a buoy that will be as small as possible, as inconspicuous as possible. And it will in no way will it be any larger in diameter than 6 inches, and probably won't be any higher than maybe 4 to 5 inches. And our buoys that we're starting out with will be blue or green, which would tend to blend in with the background. And then we would intend to mark the outside areas with some type of marking which would indicate there are aquaculture structures in this area, and you need to be aware of this as you navigate in there, try to fish in that area, or perhaps kayak through a motor through the area.
Mr. Fox.
You haven't figured out a way yet to get rid of the buoys themselves?
Mr. Fox, I don't, at this point, we just haven't. We're working on that. It's, the possibility of long line in these cages, and we will experiment with that this year, but I guess the problem we see with this is as we connect these cages to a long line, we see potential for entanglement of the line itself in the cages. And we were asked by staff how they're going to be deployed. We're not sure what's going to be the most effective way to deploy them. Do you deploy them in straight lines, or do you deploy them in a area that where your boat with the crane goes up and removes 20 cages at a time without moving? You drop some type of a spud down and then try to remove these cages in numbers and then move to another area. But, you know, certainly we're aware of the situation. We work with Tom Spradlin, who has a house on the Cone River in front of one of the pieces of bottom that we are intending to put cages on. And, you know, obviously his main objection was, I don't want to get up and look at these buoys. And we certainly assured him that they wouldn't be orange or red. They would blend in with the background. And, perhaps we've even considered the idea, do you put duck decoys out here as your buoy marker?
All right. Mr. Cowell, we have one more question for you. And that's from Mr. Garrison.
Mr. Cowell, did you put out seed oysters this year? Your company put out seed oysters this spring?
We did not seed the native oyster. Because we have lost too much money seeding the native oyster in the last 4 to 5 years. We seeded them in 2003 and 2004, 8,500 bushels in 2003 and about 12 to 1,500 bushels in 2004 in the Cone River, and the Caldo's rays eliminated most of those. But we will be putting these native triploid Debbie strain oysters in the Cone River.
Thank you, Mr. Cowart. The matter is now before the commission for action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer a few comments before we get into the points of the case. And I would just like to commend Mr. Fox for his comments. I think they were very well made, and I would support those and add that the future of the industry, the oyster industry, apart from intensive aquaculture operations, does appear to be relatively bleak. The industry has told us this repeatedly. Our scientific advisors have told us the same. I think this commission has spoken in support of intensive aquaculture operations repeatedly. And our current native resource is at a single-digit fraction of historical abundance. And that exact number may be debated, but obviously our oyster resources are very low. And this is a critical component of any future that our industry is going to have.
And that's true economically as well as ecologically. The ecological benefits of a viable oyster resource are certainly substantial and not to be discounted in any way. It's clear, though, that as Mr. Fox has pointed out, that we do need to develop standards. We need to develop some guidelines. I would hope that, in addition to staff working on this, that this would be one possible outcome of the Blue Ribbon panel that I know is being developed and convened. Hopefully aquaculture will be an important part of the discussion for that group. And I would like to think that administratively and from a policy standpoint, standards could be developed that would help us also to mitigate user group conflicts. That's obviously going to have to be a top priority. And the industry does need to take a proactive role in managing and mitigating those conflicts. And I think in this particular case, the applicants to be commended for the work that they've done to try to work to address the concerns of the protestants. And it appears that they've been successful to a large degree in doing that. I think it's also important, though, that we have a good working understanding as a commission of what's necessary for these operations to be viable. And it's fairly clear from staff's assessment of this case and the comments offered by the applicant that a wide range of depths is necessary to deal with the issue of anoxia and to deal also with winter freezing. Furthermore, you have a lot of limiting factors here that limit where the applicants can have an effective aquaculture operation. There's only a small percentage of Virginia's bottom that's viable to begin with for this type of activity. And within any given lease or within any given suite of leases that a leaseholder may have, it appears that only a small amount of that bottom is really suitable for this type of activity. And I think we need to, the commission needs to, and the public needs to understand that there are very real limits to where this can occur. So we have to deal with those constraints as we try to manage these conflicts. Furthermore, I think that in addition to administrative standards, I think the industry's long-term interests would be best served by legislation. I think we need some more legislative guidance on this. I think those details need to be hammered out in the legislature, and I think that would help this commission in its policy deliberations as well. But I think this is going to be a big part of the industry in the future, and there is a lot of potential for conflict of user groups and uses, and I think the industry's interests would be well served in the long term by seeking legislative remedies. In this specific case, I think that on balance, the net environmental impact is going to be positive. They're going to put a large number of oysters in this area. I think that's going to help contribute to cleaning the water, and certainly there will be ecological benefits. I note that the applicant has worked very hard to address the concerns. They've met several times with the protestants and tried to forge compromises. I agree with Mr. Fox that I think one of the big concerns long-term is that we need to work with the industry and staff to try to develop better marking arrangements. I wonder, too, if long lining wouldn't be a better remedy with larger markers at the corners, but for the time being, it appears that the applicant has proposed to try to put out fewer markers if possible and to paint them in a more natural color to try to minimize those visual and aesthetic impacts. But I wonder long-term if other arrangements couldn't be worked out through study and work by the staff. But, Mr. Chairman, at this point, I would move for approval of the project and as recommended by staff.
Second.
Motion made and seconded by Mr. Garrison approve as recommended by staff. Is there further discussion to the motion? Mr. Schick.
I'd just like to add something, but I can't think of anything to add. So no, between the two ends here, I think they pretty much covered it here. And
Washington and Lee on both ends.
Yeah.
Pretty well done it.
So I'd just like to lend my support.
My second was based on the fact that everywhere we go and buy oysters, they came from Louisiana. So if they come from Virginia, I think we would like them much better.
Mm-hmm. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? Motion carries. All right, thank you all very much, both parties. And the next item will be Bevins Oyster Company, item 6.